From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Time was, most coffee across this wide land was, well, just coffee. Percolated, probably, on the kitchen counter, at the diner. Some of it was pretty good, maybe even to the last drop, but a lot was watery and bland. Then along came the Peet's, the Starbucks, the specialty shops with their deep, dark brews, dark roasts. And they changed the way a lot of people took their joe. But tastes and business keep turning. Now, light roasts are getting the buzz. The big brands are hoping it's the next big thing. Bottom line, is it good? This hour on Point, American tastes in coffee and what we want in our joe. You can join the conversation. Have you started seeing the fancy new light roasts on your supermarket shelf in your coffee shop? Are you buying? Done with dark? Are you suspicious of the light stuff, what it does for you? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We will be tasting some of the new light blends this hour, but joining me first from Los Angeles is Katie McLaughlin. She writes for the Wall Street Journal. Her story, The Hot Blonde in the Coffee Shop, appeared recently in the journal. Katie, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
What's all this blonde business about? Why light roast suddenly in outlets that made their chops selling a whole lot of dark roast coffee?
Yeah, isn't it interesting how times change? There just was really a long time in specialty coffee where the name of the game was dark roasted beans. You know, these really, you walk into the shop, you can smell them, you see them, these sort of dark, oily beans made into this very, very bold brew. You mix it up with lots of milk, and it could stand up to all kinds of stuff like caramel shots and sugar and yeah. Vanilla sugar and cinnamon, et cetera. That is just really, excuse me, how we've come to think of specialty coffee, you know, fancy gourmet coffee. And all of a sudden, you are now seeing everybody from Starbucks to Peet's to a whole slew of new, really high-end coffee shops rolling out light-roasted coffee. And they're really, really putting that front and center. They're saying the reason this coffee is so great is it is light-roasted. So it's a dramatic shift.
And you're finding this right across the country, not just at those famous, nationally famous names, but Intelligentsia Coffee in Chicago, Blue Bottle Coffee in New York, and San Francisco, Four Barrel Coffee in San Francisco, Handsome Coffee Roasters in L.A. What? They're really going down this light roast path.
Yeah, this is really fascinating. All of the places that you just mentioned fall into a category that's being called the third wave in the specialty coffee world. So the first wave was regular old diner coffee. Mm-hmm. The second wave was, you know, Starbucks and Peet's, the gourmet coffees and lattes. And this is the third wave. And what these places are doing is they are really focusing on these really special beans that they're finding. They're telling you this is not, they're not just saying this is, you know, Colombian coffee. They're telling you this particular bag of coffee beans comes from this one really special farm that we found somewhere in, you know, some wonderful mountainous region of Guatemala or Ethiopia. And then they'll even go further. They'll tell you the lives of the people who work on this coffee are this way and that way. Mm-hmm. The flavors of these coffees are, and then they'll use all kinds of wine verbiage. You know, it's leathery. It's cherry-like. It has, you know, dark berry flavors. And they're really drawing your attention to the very specialness of the beans that they're selling you. And what they're also saying is that we're light roasting it so that what you taste in your cup of coffee is the specialness of these beans, not just the roast.
So in a way, they're saying the dark roast would just roll over these subtleties of flavor that we want you to think about.
Exactly. The position of people in this third wave is, well, dark roasting comes from an era when it wasn't possible to get these really special, magical, flavorful beans. They're saying, well, dark roasting was used as a way of covering the flaws in the coffee that was available from the commodity market, when all beans in the world basically were all mixed together.
Okay.
And light roasting is now possible because the raw material is so spectacular.
Katie, I've got some basic questions here. Is this just about fancy pants coffee? I mean, if you go out and get Maxwell House or Folgers, has that always been light roast?
Yeah, the American palate really likes a lighter roast. So that has been part of you know, the mass market brands that you've mentioned for a long time. But there was a big shift. We're sort of going back and forth here, and it just shows you how, you know, the more things change, the more they remain the same. When Peet's really launched the specialty coffee market, and then Starbucks grew out of Peet's, when they came along, they really introduced Americans to this dark roasted coffee.
Now, why are Peet's
taste.
Yeah, why are Peet's and Starbucks doing this? I mean, Starbucks came out with its blonde roast, they called it last month. Peet's is coming out with one, they call it a medium roast, but it's lighter. I mean, they made their name on dark in opposition to what Americans used to drink before they, you know, got up on the rails. Why? What's the business interest, or explain it to us, why they would go in this light direction? Now, isn't that kind of away from their own brands?
Isn't it fascinating? Well, what's happening in a place like Starbucks is that, as we all know, Starbucks just had enormous growth over the last, in the last 10, 15 years. And they just expanded and expanded and expanded. In the recession, Starbucks has done quite well, but they have stopped putting a new unit up, you know, every square inch of territory available. What they want to do now is really get more value out of the units that they have, serve more customers. So they want to do two things. They want to bring in all of the people who have avoided them before because they don't like the taste of the coffee. How many times have you heard, oh, I can't drink that, it tastes burned?
Yes, I have certainly heard that. I mean, I drink plenty, but plenty of people just squinch their face up and say, yuck!
Yeah, it tastes burned, right? It's so funny. Some people love it. Actually, my own husband and I, we are one of these couples. He loves Starbucks. Every time we pass a Starbucks, he wants to go in there. And when I drink the coffee, I just think, you know, I know this is supposed to be good, but it tastes burned to me. So Blonde Roast is created exactly for people like us. That's going to get two sales, you know, from our own household instead of just one.
So they've you report 10,787 U.S. Starbucks stores now. That number is not growing as fast as it once was, but maybe they can bring you in for a cup of light roast,
right,
Kitty.
That's one of the goals, to bring in the customer who's been avoiding them. And they did market research last year, and they found that 42% of coffee drinkers in the U.S. prefer the lighter roast. They actually did like a Pepsi Challenge type taste test out there, and that's what they discovered. But what they also want to do is turn the people who go in there to buy a latte or a frappuccino or something in the afternoon, to turn them into buyers of their beans for the morning. You know, they have found that there are people who use Starbucks as sort of that afternoon treat, but they don't use it as the source for their daily morning cup of joe that they're going to sell. They're going to blend at home. So they really want to create those sales. And that's why you're seeing this. They also, what specialty coffee business would want to cede the high ground to this new wave of high-end coffee shops? They want to stay in that position of being on top of the trends and in the high end. So if you're seeing places that are really chic, you know, like Intelligentsia or like Blue Bottle doing the light roast, Starbucks and Peet's don't want to be left out of that. They want a piece of that action too.
Everybody wants in on the action. Kitty McLaughlin, writing for the Wall Street Journal. Great story, the hot blonde in the coffee shop. Blonde, of course, Starbucks term. I hope you and your husband can work it out now at the cafe with everything on offer there, Katie. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
I want to bring in a couple of great coffee names here. Jamie von Schneidel joins me in the studio. He's owner and head roaster at Barismo. It's an independent coffee roaster in Arlington, Massachusetts, and he has got a whole lot of coffee on the table with us. Jamie, it is great to have you here.
Tom, thanks for letting me be here.
And from Long Beach, California, Ted Lingle joins us. He is executive director of the Coffee Quality Institute, former executive director of the Specialty Coffee Association of America, nonprofit trade association, comes from a long line of coffee brewers, a coffee brewing family, Lingle Brothers Coffee. He's author of The Basics of Brewing Coffee, The Basics of Cupping Coffee, The Coffee Brewer's Handbook. Ted Lingle in Long Beach, California, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm great, and we're just looking at what's going on here. Jamie, you've got a lot to teach us here, but I think you've got some of this new Starbucks blend right in front of us. Can we taste it?
Sure.
This is what they call their blonde? Blonde
roast?
Yeah,
this
roast
is the Veranda.
They've got a couple different styles. And what do you think of this, Jamie? It looks lighter color to me. Definitely coffee, but definitely not that really thick Starbucks dark roast. Is that good? Is that a good light roast, Jamie? Is that going to, you know, put them back in big business?
I would say it's a better roast than what I've tasted. It's definitely trying to encourage people, you know, who are looking for something that's milder and not as strong on the roast. So I would say it's not going to win me over, and it's not going to win over my the people who mm-hmm. are in my segment of the market. But it is definitely a much more approachable cup, something that if I was in a pinch, I wouldn't put cream and sugar in it immediately.
So. Ted Lingle, what's going on here? Is this Starbucks and the other big ones just trying to play across the whole market? They've grown out of their dark roast niche here, Ted?
Yeah, I think exactly that. With 42% of the people wanting a lighter roast, then as they expand their sales, both nationally and internationally, they recognize the need to offer a greater array of choices for the consumer.
Do we end up with better coffee overall, Ted, or do you even look at it that way? Dark roast, light roast, can they all be as, you know, one as good as the other if they're done right, done well, done excellently?
Well, that's not the right way to look at it.
Okay.
The one who gets to say I like it or I don't like it is a consumer. And so obviously with a broader range of choices, then they're going to end up with more consumers that really enjoy a particular product they produce.
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about American tastes in coffee. Dark, light, dark roast, light roast, and in between, what we want in our Java, our Joe. I'm joined today by a couple of great coffee drinkers, coffee aficionados, and people who just know the business. With me in the studio, Jamie Van Schneidel. He's owner and head roaster at Barismo. It's an independent coffee roaster in our backyard here in Arlington, Massachusetts. And with us from Long Beach, California, Ted Lingle. Comes from a long line of coffee brewers and roasters, Lingle Brothers Coffee. He's now executive director of the Coffee Quality Institute. And Jamie, you've got a little more light roast for us. You're going to grind it right now. Hit it, baby. Let's get this going. We've got some beans in here. What have we got coming here, Jamie?
We've got the Tully's Breakfast Blend, and then we're going to try the Pete's Domingo.
Okay. Blend. Okay. A little grind. We've got those beans that'll be coming on down. These are both light roasts.
That's what they say, yeah.
Oh, that's what they say.
I would say that the Tully's is definitely a little on the darker side for what I would call a light roast, and the Pete's is a sort of a light medium, more of a medium side.
Now, yeah. Tully's, this is what sort of the premium offering of Green Mountain Coffee, which we see all over the place. Mm-hmm. So let's do some pouring. Let's do some drinking here. Okay. Ted, while Jamie gets this together, I mean, put this in context for us. Katie McLaughlin said we're in the third wave of American coffee tastes or offerings. How do you interpret what that means? Take us through those waves, Ted. Where have we been?
I've heard that, and I always chuckle when I hear that because if you really go back and count the generations, this is about six or seven. And what's always interesting for me to understand is that many of the people that really started some of these well-known companies, like the Folger family, mm-hmm. Peter Folger, or the Hills Brothers family, when they started in the business back in the turn of the century, they were just as impassioned about quality and mm-hmm. finding great products as what
anybody today
third wave mm-hmm. Says today.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's the arc of that evolution, though, been, Ted? I mean, take us, if it's three waves or it's six waves, I don't know, but where...
It's really fairly fascinating to follow. Back at the turn of the century, the last century, there was a small roaster in virtually every community in the United States. And then over time, those businesses disappeared, mm-hmm. and we ended up with an enormous competition in the supermarkets, which became the main distribution channel for coffee, with about four or five firms.
Okay.
And there was a tremendous consolidation of consumer choices at that time because the primary method of competition was price.
And it was mainly light roast that you'd have in a can?
Roasting coffee more darkly decreases its weight. It shrinks in the roasting process.
So it takes more bean to make that dark roast.
More bean. So it's more expensive to do it that way.
Mm-hmm. So and Maxwell House and Folgers, they didn't want to go too dark because...
They were convinced that the way to make people buy more coffee was to make it cheaper. And then we had a totally different approach. And I think Alfred Pete is probably the individual that you'd give credit for changing that view. He said the way you get people to drink more coffee is to make it better, mm-hmm. not cheaper. And so he began searching out fine coffees that he'd found at Origin back when he was a tea buyer.
But his idea of better was a darker roast, wasn't it, than most Americans?
That was the Alfred Pete phenomenon. He liked to roast it darkly.
Mm-hmm.
So when some of his customers who went up to Seattle to open Starbucks, namely Jerry Baldwin and Jim Reynolds, they took that dark roast style with them. But that was unusual for the trade, even the gourmet trade at the time.
Ted, can you explain light roasting and dark roasting? Is it just a matter of how many minutes you roast the beans? Do you start with completely different beans if you intend to go dark or light, or is it the same beans and they can go either way? It's just how long you leave them in there?
Well, it can be a combination of all the above. I mean, that's sort of the art and craft of roasting. You take the material you have, and then you decide, number one, how far you go in the roast. And then you decide, two, how to get there. Then the roasting strategies are basically high initial heat, low end heat,
mm-hmm.
constant heat throughout the roast, or low initial heat, high end heat. And what's fascinating about coffee is all three of those methods, those profiles, even when you get to the same end point, which we call color, you can end up with three very different tasting products. Because the chemistry of the coffee is changing during that roasting process.
So we're talking anywhere from what, 6, 7, 8, 9 minutes on the light end to...
No, this is the fascinating part about coffee. Those roasts are coming out essentially in the 10 to 14 minute range.
Okay.
During the first 10 minutes, the coffee is virtually just giving up moisture and drying out.
Mm-hmm.
So the end product after a 10-minute roast is going to taste virtually the same. It's in that last, say, 120 seconds or maybe mm-hmm. 180 seconds
wow. mm-hmm.
that all this chemistry happens and these flavors change.
And let me ask you the all-important question, Ted. Light roast or dark roast, do they have different amounts of caffeine? Which one has more kick?
No. The caffeine is unchanged in the roasting process, so it's not going to change at all. The caffeine level will depend on the green beans they bought. For instance, Robusta coffees have twice the caffeine of Arabicas.
So it's all about the beans, not the roasting time.
It's not the roasting at all.
We've got a couple here. Jamie Van Schneidel's been grinding and dripping and ready, and we're ready to taste. What have we got here, Jamie?
Right. First up here, we're going to do the Pete's.
Okay. Now, this is Pete's. This is what they're coming. This is the lighter roast they're coming out with.
They call
it medium, I guess.
Yep.
And again, the color, not as dark as I would associate. Mm. Definitely lighter than what than what you're used to in the store. Can you taste more nuance in this than you would in a Pete's dark roast, Jamie?
I think so. I mean, this is actually definitely on the lighter end, at least in the cup profile, and definitely cleaner.
They call it medium, but it seems lighter to me than the so-called blonde from Starbucks.
Right. I mean, when I got to try the Starbucks, the Veranda versus the Willow, I felt like the Willow was more comparable to what we're tasting here, whereas the Veranda
mm-hmm.
is just a little roastier than that.
Starbucks with a couple of light right. roasts now, and the even lighter one called the Willow.
Right.
I mean, what do you find in your coffee drinkers, Jamie? Can you tell just by the way somebody walks in whether they're going to order a dark roast or a light roast? Is it a sort of a character trait? Or
People kind of announce it. They come in the door and they say, I want something light and bright and acidic, or they say, I want something darker. And usually when people come in and say they want a dark roast, we just ask them, well, how do you brew at home?
Mm-hmm.
We start the discussion from there because light roasts have a tendency not to brew as well. In certain methods, you wouldn't want to put a very light roast in a French press. You want something, maybe a nice pour over, something where you can control the temperature a little hotter, get a better extraction. So,
are people clear about caffeine? Do they come in, wanting that punch of caffeine, saying, I got to have a dark roast because I really need the energy?
Well, I would say in our segments, people are more coming in for the taste experience and for the interaction with the baristas at the bar to ask questions, to learn a little bit about the story, the flavor profile, how we sourced mm-hmm. the coffee, what we did with it to roast it, what we did with it to brew it for them.
Ted, so. I have the feeling that may be the case in Jamie's setting, but across the country, I have a feeling a lot of people thought, strong coffee means more caffeine, strong, i.e. dark roast, a lot of people think.
That that could be. There are a lot of misconceptions that are floating through the coffee industry. So it's hard to know exactly where the consumer's at in terms of the science of coffee.
Right.
The ultimate test is consumers need to enjoy the cup they're drinking, and that's what brings them back for a second cup.
Let's bring our listeners in here. We've got a lot of coffee drinkers who are on the line and listening very closely. Let's go to Danbury, Connecticut, and Paul. Hi, Paul. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Pretty well. What do you think?
You know what? I'm particularly a dark roast type of person. I feel it makes a good pairing, especially when you're eating something sweet with it. You know, it's that extreme bitterness, and then you're taking a piece of sweet chalk or something that really makes the cup. I've tried many light roast, and I always go back to dark roast. It's just got that kick in it that I like. Something that I found that a light roast can't do for me yet.
What about the argument, Paul, that, you know, the light roast is going to actually let you taste more sort of facets of the flavor that's in that cup?
You know what? Having tried many light roasts now, and I will admit I haven't tried the new ones from Starbucks or Pete's, I just feel this rich flavor that I get from a good dark roast really just satisfies me. It just makes me feel warm and invited and just very relaxed. I personally brew an espresso roast at home in an espresso pot, so maybe that's why I'm partial and I grew up drinking espresso. But I really feel that if I'm going to get a cup of coffee, it's going to be a dark roast.
Hey, Paul, I appreciate your call. Ted Lingle in California, can you tell a dark roast drinker from a mile away by the way they walk or they stretch their hand out for the cup? I mean, what makes one person want light and another dark?
It's just a matter of individual preference. If you talk to someone about their food habits, you can get some clues, but certainly you can't tell just by looking at them.
What kind of clues in their food habits?
Well, do they like spicy food or bland food? Do they drink white wine or red wine? Do they taste the food before they put salt and pepper on it? I mean, it's just people are not equally sort of gifted in terms of the taste buds on their tongue or the olfactory membranes in their nose. And so that one of the things to understand about food science, and particularly consumer perception, is two people can experience the same sensation and come to totally opposite conclusions. And neither one of which is wrong. It just means that's the way they see it.
I'm really interested in the cultural part of this, Ted. I mean, you know, for a long time, it was kind of hip to drink dark. I mean, you know, the guys who played the bongo drums or had the beret or I don't know, it was the hip thing.
I mean, that got all the consumer hype, but that really wasn't what was happening in the industry at the time. Starbucks, to its credit, did a very good job of convincing consumers that dark roast was gourmet. But there remained a group of coffee aficionados and coffee bean stores throughout the country that stayed with more traditional roasts.
Jamie's got another one set up for us here. What's this, Jamie?
This is the Tully's Breakfast Blend.
So this is the Green Mountain, sort of their premium brand Tully's Breakfast, and it's light again.
It says it's light. This one is visibly a little darker, and then you get that aftertaste. You get that sort of a little bit more that roasty, chocolatey,
smoky. It does
smoky.
Still have an echo of what I would associate with dark roast, but it's not a heavy footprint.
It's definitely not as heavy a footprint, but it's definitely there in the aftertaste. It's not as clean as the last two we've tasted.
Can you perceive whether in your, you know, the rarefied realm of your place or more broadly – that something's changing in American taste here? People backing off that sort of big, deep bass drum of dark roast?
Oh, absolutely. I would say 4 years ago when we first opened, we were facing so many people coming in and almost a backlash of, what are you doing? Is this an elitist approach? What is this, you know, fancy coffee?
But did you only offer light roast?
We've only offered light roast. We've progressively walked our roast lighter as we've been able to buy better green coffees, unroasted coffees. And so as our sourcing has gotten better, our roasting has gone lighter and lighter. And I would say right now, everything we offer is light. We don't have anything that has surface oil on it. So, you know, someone who's really used to a dark roast, that's why we start the conversation with how do you brew, because we want to make sure that they don't try to French press something that's really light and get a very sour cup.
Surface oil, what's that about, Ted? Where does surface oil show up in the process, Ted?
Well, they're fats in green coffee beans. It's like they're fats in peanuts. And when you roast them, you convert those fats into oils, And then one of the other byproducts of roasting is carbon dioxide gas. So the gas that's trapped in the bean cells wants to escape, and as it escapes, it pushes those oils to the surface. And that's why in coffees that are roasted, say, to 45 SEA Agron scale, you'll find some botches of oil on the surface, whereas if that color gets down to 35 or 25, virtually the whole bean surface is coated with oil.
I have to say, I like this Tully's, what is it, morning breakfast or whatever, but maybe it's a kind of compromise, Jamie. I mean, there's a little bit of the sort of light nuance, but also the dark oomph in there.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think sometimes it comes down to personal preference, but also it could be strength, is that when you roast a little darker, the beans are a little more soluble. So even though I'm brewing all of these coffees the same way, using the same dose, the same amount of coffee, you're going to get a different taste out of that.
Does a light roast mean weaker coffee? I mean, what's the relationship between strong coffee and the roasting? Can it be strong in either dark or light?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there is the terminology strong is in bold. These words that we use, we have to be careful about it because sometimes it's about how you brew it. If you change how you brew a light roast, you can make it strong. You can balance the acidity to some degree. You know, acidity can be a dirty word, though. We have to be careful. Sometimes
a little can be great. Too much, and you don't like it anymore.
Right. So I always try to tell people it's about how you brew it, what you do with it, using it at the optimal time when it's off of the roast from being fresh roasted.
Let's go to Massey's Mill, Virginia, and JD. Hi, JD. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hi. What do you think?
Just wanted to say I'm probably much more in line with the average coffee drinker. I drink coffee every day and, you know, basically the same amount of coffee, but different types depending on where I'm at. I do a lot of driving with my work. And so it depends on what gas station's on the route or what place is on the route. I'll stop at a Starbucks or some specialty place if it's in the way. I'm a musician also. I get paid some places in coffee, which I like. so I can tell the difference between good coffee and bad coffee, but I don't have a real strong sense of entitlement to good coffee, what someone would call good coffee.
What about dark roast versus light, JD? Do you go dark or do you go light?
I think that it's a marketing thing. I think that it's light and dark. I think I it just depends. I'm not really looking for a dark roast or a light roast. It depends on whether I need a lot of energy. And from what I've heard from your guests, it doesn't really matter as far as the caffeine content of dark and light. And I think that's what I thought, is a darker roast is going to be more punch than a lighter roast. So I guess I'm wrong about that.
A lot of people think that way, but you're willing to go either way as long as it tastes good and maybe not so picky, JD.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. It depends on the water. I mean, you know, if you've got too much water and not enough coffee, then it kind of ruins the thing. If you've got too much coffee and not enough water, then it kind of makes it too. You drink one cup and you feel like you drank a pot.
JD, keep on trucking. Jamie, you're nodding along with that last observation by JD. You know, if it's weak, it's weak. Too much water, it's there.
The strength in terms of what we call in our industry the throw weight, the amount of coffee to water, is usually what people are talking about. It's all about strength.
Yeah. Well,
use a good dose. Use a proper dose.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about American tastes in coffee and the changes and waves in taste through time, dark roast, light roast, and in between, what we want in our Java, in our Joe. Ted Lingle joins us today. He's executive director of the Coffee Quality Institute, joins us from Long Beach, California. And with me in the studio, with a lot of coffee on the table right now, we've been tasting already, and there's more to come, is Jamie Van Schneidel, owner and head roaster at Barismo. It's an independent coffee roaster in Arlington, Massachusetts. You can join us this hour. What's your question on how to brew the perfect cup, light or dark? Can you see the argument that there's more room for subtlety in a light brew? Do you want subtlety in your cup of Joe? Do you want it dark? We've got a little water boiling here. We're going to have some dripping in a minute. Lots of response online. Ricky writes, I've always wondered why people go to Starbucks, since it tastes burnt and awful. It's not like the coffee in France isn't full-bodied and bold, but that's different than harsh and ashen. And Ricky says, the only conclusion I came up with, other than the omnipresent American issue of convincing people they're smarter and better by selling them something exclusive, is that most Starbucks customers are configuring their drink to contain so much sugar, the base of coffee has to be pretty cruelly strong in order to stand up to it. Ted Lingle, how about that? I mean, there is a lot of, you know, caramel this and sugar that comes in Starbucks. Katie was saying earlier, you almost have to have that big dark roast to take all that sugar on top.
It's not the sugar, it's the milk solids.
Okay.
That you need an intense flavoring agent in order to punch through the milk solids, the fat and the milk. And what Starbucks discovered is that a darker roast does that very nicely.
So presumably that will put some cap on light roast, because so many people go for all that milk solids in there now that the light roast wouldn't carry it, I guess, Ted.
I don't think the change in roast color offering strategy is driven by its cafe business. I think Starbucks is really looking at the broader consumer market, and particularly sales to consumers through supermarkets.
Here's a listener writes, the big distinction in coffee is treating it more like wine. Says the U.S. coffee industry essentially ruined this product in the post-war period of the 1950s, 60s, putting in more and more cheap Robusta beans, so that the only way to tolerate the brew was to produce a weak, diluted dishwater coffee. What do you think about that perspective, Ted?
I think that's pretty much on point about what happened with the major national roasters, as they were competing on price. And so what the smaller roasters discovered is that people really were willing to pay for quality, provided you actually delivered on that promise.
And here Krista writes on Facebook. She says, Americans have gradually shifted toward taking cream and sugar or flavors in our coffee. She says, when I was growing up, it seemed that all adults took it black. How does the return to light roast affect that? I do remember a time when cream and sugar seemed to me less common than now. Ted, what about light roast and all that?
Well, I'm not sure I would agree with that premise. That, in fact, I'd say it's almost the opposite, that the world grew up knowing what we used to fondly call Boston coffee, and a fairly prominent chain, Dunkin' Donuts, has made a history out of delivering regular coffee containing cream and sugar.
Yeah.
And so I think it's really been the advent of the specialty industry and the people who really enjoy the difference in a taste profile of a product that have pioneered black coffee, because they really make a big point about learning how to recognize the different coffee flavors from different origins.
And not covering up what's in the cup. We got pushback here on the caffeine front. Bob says light roasts have higher caffeine content. What about that, Ted?
Roasting has nothing to do with the caffeine content. It all comes from the green bean and the type of beans that are used.
So what if you're looking for more caffeine and, you know, people are telling you about origins, what do you look for?
Well, and if they're looking for more caffeine, then they need to find those rare purveyors that are offering a high-quality Robusta coffee.
Because Robusta was seen as the cheaper strain, Ted.
Well, it's always been less expensive, but that's for different reasons than its caffeine content. Mm-hmm. Essentially, Robusta coffees were processed for the soluble or instant coffee industry, where the product standards weren't really as tight in the beginning as they were for the Arabica market.
And what about for decaf, for people looking for a better-tasting decaf? Where should they turn?
Well, they need to go to their local specialty roaster, where they can get a choice of decaffeinated coffees from a wide variety of origins, and usually a choice in processing methods.
Can you make decaf out of all the same beans that you would for regular?
Yeah, essentially, you can extract caffeine from the green bean. Caffeine's water soluble at temperatures above 175 degrees,
mm-hmm.
or there are also various chemical solvents like liquid carbon dioxide,
mm-hmm.
or I think it's methyl ethyl trichloride. So you can remove the caffeine before the coffee's roasted.
Let's go to Richard in Greenwich, Connecticut. Richard, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
I'm getting a little bit of a chuckle out of the esoteric nature of the discussion. And I guess I'm proof that not everybody from Greenwich is an elitist.
All right.
Perhaps I'm a rube, but My favorite coffee is McDonald's. No matter where I go, what town, what state, I find their coffee consistently pleasurable. Regarding coffee like Starbucks, I have tasted it. I'll never taste it again. To me, it tastes so sour and bitter that I can't believe people enjoy it.
And yet they shell out plenty for it, Richard. I mean, Ted, if Richard likes McDonald's coffee, what does that mean that he likes? Are you aware of what they're serving these days?
Well, yeah, and I take my hat off to McDonald's because they've done a tremendous job in sort of revitalizing their coffee program by buying better quality beans and processing them in a way that really now matches what Starbucks is doing with their blonde roast. Increasing their brew strength and creating a great product that's enjoyable by a large number of consumers.
Mm. We've got more coffee on the table here. Jamie, what are you pouring? What are you brewing up here?
Right now, I've got two coffees that we've roasted. I've got a Costa Rica. It's from a mill that also owns land called Don Mayo, and the plot on that farm is called La Loma.
Okay.
And I've also got a coffee from a small farm that we work with in Guatemala. It's right outside of Antigua. It's called El Bosque, which means the forest. It's Miriam de Villanueva. It's her farm, and this is actually one varietal from the farm that we had them pick by color. It's a yellow Bourbon, and Bourbon denotes the type of varietal.
And so, picking by color achieves what? You
in
got
this
yellow,
case,
therefore what?
Right. In this case, they're... The entire farm is red and yellow Bourbon. It's this type of Arabica, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And we were trying to come up with a clever way of getting money to the people who worked on the farm as opposed to just paying the people who own the farm. So we decided to have them pick by color and say, let's do a special lot where they can pick red and they can pick yellow and get paid not by the pound,
mm-hmm.
but get paid a little better wage to pick. The byproduct was there was a big contrast between the red and the yellow. The yellow was much more aromatic. It was much more interesting. The acidity was toned down. The red was, it was tannins. It was, you know, on that tart cherry cranberry side.
Wow.
So it was shocking for, you know, to be able to see the coffee, you know, the lot mixed together and then to have them pick it separately and then know. And the customer reaction from it has been tremendous just to sort of see the contrast between it because, you know, most people...
Well, let's taste that one first. You've got us all primed up here. I mean, we're into so many angles on this now. You've got the terroir with the exact plot of land. You've got the color of the bean. You've got the fate of the coffee picker very much on your mind. And then here it comes into the cup. Now, this is a light roast. How long did you roast this?
This is very light. You know, when you're talking... You know, you're not going to see it in color because the strength is higher.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of light, this is very light.
Okay.
So usually you get the aroma first.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, so you've got sort of 16 different little angles of flavor going on in there, and this is the yellow. That means that's the point at which in the maturation process it's picked.
Right. The fruit when it matures is a sort of a yellowish orange, and that's how you denote it. The trees all look the same. It's just some have red fruit and some have yellow.
Delicious out of Guatemala. Let's get some Costa Rica here as well. Let me get a call while we're doing it. Corky in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Corky, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm totally fascinated with all of this, and I started my day with Jamie's Red.
Oh, you're a customer. All right, so you know it directly.
I'm a customer. Yeah, but I've been working with Japanese coffee people for lots of years now, and they're interested in medium to light roasts, mostly because, as one of your specialists said, there's more nuance. And they say also that these lighter roasts play well with others. That is, you can make much better blends. So my question for your specialist, is blends versus single origin. In Japan, the blend is seen as the work of the master and shows greater, sort of attunement or, you know, fetishism even, where you see blends in America sometimes, not from Jamie, of course, but as ways of hiding defects in beans.
Now, that's interesting.
But so I'd like to hear more about, you know, blends versus single origin.
Yeah, let us do it, Corky. I'll bring it to Jamie, who gets you up in the morning. But, Ted, let me start with you. I mean, here's Corky wants to know about blends and all the way out to the sort of fetishist end of this. Does blend mean, you know, the sort of, what, the real sophistication, or is that single bean, or does it matter, Ted?
Well, it depends on the purpose of the blender, and she's pretty well nailed it. The Japanese, very sophisticated marketers will create blends not just for particular categories of consumer, but also for gender and age. Very sophisticated marketers.
Wow.
Japanese overall are very fine tasters. They seem to be better tasters than the rest of us. And so blending for quality or for to achieve a specific taste is very smart marketing on their part. Whereas in the U.S., the tendency, particularly with major roasters, had been to blend for price. So they were taking mm-hmm. coffees that wouldn't work well as a single origin because of defect levels mm-hmm. or taste, mm-hmm. trying to blend them together to achieve an acceptable product at a very low price point.
Wow. Even blending for gender and age, we're into real subtleties here, and it's pretty terrific to learn. Jamie Van Schindel, here's your customer, comes in. She loves it. She's thinking about what goes on with blending. Do you do your own blending?
We only blend for espresso, and we keep that to two or three bean pairings. For me, I've long been a critic of blending as a way of, yes, it's the approach in blending is to have consistency, but also it's kind of about, in the business aspect, it feels like it's taking inferior products and trying to mash them together to get
better. But it wouldn't have to be, obviously. You could blend very superior beans.
Right. And I think a lot of people do. I mean, we've been very heavily influenced by what they're doing in the Scandinavian approach, which was a transparent approach. It's telling you what the blend is. So you know that sense of identity and saying, these are the coffees that are in this blend. And with that, then I can agree with doing some blending. But for drip coffees, we don't. I mean, I think a lot of the more progressive roasters, in our little market segment, they just really avoid, breakfast blends and things like that because you want to have the identity of the farm, which is where all that story and that interesting, unique flavor is.
Story. The fact that stories become so important is interesting in itself. On the other hand, there you've got, Corky says, your Japanese master's going for the blend. New York, Long Island, New York. Minnie, thanks for calling. Minnie, you're on the air.
Hi. I just had a question. I have a hard time distinguishing between the different types of coffee beans just by the name of it.
Mm-hmm.
So what I like to do is I go by the smell of it. So when you go to a specialty barista, it's hard because they don't usually have them out. And I tend to go to Whole Foods,
because mm-hmm.
then you can go through all the different types of beans. So I was just wondering, how do you kind of go around that?
You mean to figure out if you got a dark roast or a light roast, can you do it by smell, Jamie?
Well, smell is a big part of taste, so you can. I mean, if you're looking for bags that have one-way valves, I tend to find a lot of customers like to squeeze the bags.
Mm-hmm, little puff.
Yep, get a smell, and if mm-hmm. it smells good, it's probably going to taste good. I still think the best way is to support your, support a local coffee shop. It's one that's trying to do good things, and find one of the rotating program where you can taste lots of coffees.
What's this last brew you've got for us here?
This is the Costa Rica, the Don Mayo. Mm-hmm. It's a larger mill in Costa Rica, but also very well known for their high quality.
Ooh, very nice round flavor.
Yep, this is a little more medium. It's got some nuance, but it's not very heavy-handed and not as high as acidity as the last one.
I mean, I know you can go out into all kinds of exotic beans and preparations and really, really wonderful stuff. We had George Howell in here, I don't know, a couple of years ago from George Howell Coffee, long time big roaster. He brought us some extraordinary coffees, some of them all the way almost out toward tea flavors. Ted Lingle, story has become very important to American coffee buyers, at least for a segment of them. It's important in Jamie's world. Where do you think the story is headed now, Ted, with people ordering tall blondes at Starbucks?
Well, that's sort of polar opposites about what Starbucks is trying to do versus what Jamie's able to do in his store. And ultimately, I think the coffee industry is headed in the direction of the wine industry. So much like Jamie was describing the exquisite flavors you get from a yellow bourbon in a particular part of, I think it was Costa Rica, that ultimately, just like we have Chablis and Chardonnays and Cabernet Sauvignons, which are a type of grape, ultimately the coffee industry will get there. It may take us another 1,000 years, but that's where we're headed.
And in the meantime, in the great spectrum of dark roast and light roast, do you think Americans will stay clustered around either end, or is there a happy medium where everybody can drink the same pot, Ted?
I don't think you'd want that. The one of the things that's interesting about the gourmet consumer, someone who really can taste a difference and appreciate what causes it, is they tend to be fickle, and they like to experiment with different things. So they like the idea of being able to buy a dark roast one day and a light roast the following week.
Well,
so I don't think we want, as an industry group, go to and homogenized product.
Mm-hmm. And that's our country, I guess, always looking for the next great thing and following their taste buds when it comes to coffee to find it. Ted Lingle, it's been just great having you with us from Long Beach, California, and the Coffee Quality Institute there. Ted, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Tom.
And Jamie Van Schindel, owner and head roaster at Barismo, we cannot thank you enough for all these delicious coffees on the table. Your last two here, really special, really nice. Thank you so much for coming in, Jamie.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, happy coffee drinking, dark or light, or in between. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.